Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dan Griffith. I'm with the law firm of Whiteford, Taylor & Preston, and we represent the City of Rehoboth Beach Board of Adjustment and its individual members who were the defendants below and are the appellants here. I would like to introduce to the court my associate, Vicki Shoemaker, who is seated to my left. May it please the court, we have presented two main issues for your consideration on appeal this morning. The first issue is a relatively straightforwardly worded issue, but it has nuances, and that issue is whether or not Stingray Rock, the restaurant Stingray Rock, was required and is required to obtain a permit of compliance to construct an outdoor dining patio at its restaurant in Rehoboth Beach. The second issue is whether, assuming it is required to obtain a permit of compliance, understanding that it cannot do so in its present non-conforming state, whether Stingray Rock is whether the denial of Stingray Rock's application for a variance was improper or not. Because the first issue predominates, with Your Honor's indulgence, I will focus on that for the majority of my presentation. And that issue, again, is whether or not Stingray Rock is required to obtain a permit of compliance to construct its outdoor dining patio. The City of Rehoboth Beach has unambiguously established two things. Number one is a procedure for obtaining a permit of compliance, and number two, and more importantly, the circumstances under which a permit of compliance is required. And the relevant provision that I'm referring to is under Chapter 70 of the City of Rehoboth Beach Municipal Code, which is entitled Zoning, and then under Chapter 70, Section 19, which is entitled Use Restrictions. And Chapter 270, Section 19 provides, in pertinent part, no one shall construct or operate a patio unless it is included in a special permit of compliance issued pursuant to Chapter 215, which applies to restaurants. Your Honors, I would submit that this provision could not be clearer in addressing the issue of whether or not Stingray Rock is required to obtain a permit of compliance. Again, it says no one shall construct or operate a patio without a permit of compliance. So with all due respect to the mountain of paper we've submitted, in our view, that provision ends the analysis and should have ended the analysis on whether or not a permit of compliance was required. However, Stingray Rock has relied upon and referenced throughout the underlying proceedings a different section of the Municipal Code of the City of Rehoboth Beach. And that section is 215, Chapter 215, which applies to restaurants, Section 7B. And that provision provides, in relevant part, an existing restaurant where alcoholic liquor is sold or consumed, established prior to June 14, 1991, is not required to obtain a permit of compliance pursuant to this chapter, unless required as a condition of extension or modification of the premises of the restaurant. So Stingray Rock has seized upon that provision and the particular language in that provision relating to required as a condition of extension or modification of the premises, and argued both administratively before the City of Rehoboth Beach City Council and Board of Adjustment and before the Superior Court and before Your Honors that this patio is not an extension of the premises of the restaurant, and therefore
let's focus initially on the premises of the restaurant language. The Superior Court asked the rhetorical question, is it a part of the building, the entire building, or the land in the building? Which is it?
I think that answer is with reference to Title IV, Your Honor, in the Delaware Code.
What is it under the Rehoboth City Code?
Premises is not defined, but I would submit, Your Honor, that premises in this circumstance means the interior of the structure, not including the patio. In fact, the patio is referred to in the statute upon which the code is based as an extension of premises patio. So clearly, by calling it an extension of premises patio, the premises without the patio the restaurant without the patio is the premises. The patio requires an extension of the premises.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't patio, the square footage of the patio, does not count towards the square footage limitation of the restaurant?
That's correct, Your Honor, under the restaurant chapter of the municipal code. The code separates the restaurant from patios. The Section 215 is addressed to restaurants, but patios are treated differently from restaurants. So I think the Superior Court was focusing on premises of the restaurant under 215, whereas under the 270, which addresses patios, that makes it a little more clear that a patio is not part of the premises of the restaurant.
Are these circumstances sufficient or insufficient to require judicial interpretation of the intent?
We believe, Your Honor, because the language of the code is so clear, and applying the plain and ordinary meaning of these terms, that there is no statutory, there is no judicial interpretation of the statute required. All that is required is application of the plain meaning of the words in the code. And again, where it says no one shall construct or operate a patio unless it's included in a permit of compliance, I don't think that that language could be any clearer if the question is, do we need a permit of compliance if we're building a patio? We don't need to go beyond that language. However, if we do go beyond that language, I think if statutory construction is required, there is an abundance of support for our position that a permit of compliance is required. Two things in particular. When the court does go beyond the plain language of the code and indulges in statutory construction, one of the most important factors that the case law tells us is how has the municipality itself, how has the government body interpreted that provision? And we have a long body. We have two things. Number one, we've told the applicant, we've told Stingray Rock, here's how we interpret this. Here's how we've always interpreted this. Yes, you do need a permit of compliance to build this patio.
So is that consistent with how the city of Rehoboth has addressed other patios at grottos and other locations?
Absolutely, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, in somewhat of an ironic twist, on the issue of whether or not our denial of Stingray Rock's variance was appropriate, Stingray Rock took the position that, hey, you granted a variance to all of these other restaurants for their patios. So what they're really essentially conceding is that all of these other restaurants understood that a permit of compliance was necessary. The problem, both with the other restaurants and with Stingray Rock, is that they were non-conforming. So they couldn't get a permit of compliance. In order to give them a permit of compliance, we have to certify that they're in compliance with the building code, with the municipal code. None of them were, and neither is Stingray Rock. The manner in which you get your permit of compliance is you first have to go get a variance. And getting the variance is what gets you the permit of compliance. So all of those other restaurants have gone to get a variance, gotten a variance, and then gotten the permit of compliance.
Can I interrupt for a second? And I know this is not the part that you wanted to focus on, but it does seem to be a pretty obvious question. How is it that at every other restaurant that wanted to put in a patio and that applied for a variance got one and Stingray didn't?
Your Honor, that is an excellent question that requires an individual consideration of each application. As we've all briefed, the standards for granting or denying a variance request is very idiosyncratic to the applicant. It is the impact on the neighbors. It's the hardship to the applicant. In the other circumstances, the Board of Adjustment came to the determination that there either was not exceptional practical difficulties or undue hardship, exceptional practical difficulties or an undue hardship for the applicant. There was not an impact on the neighboring area, and decided to grant it. But all of those considerations are individual. There is no uniform checkbox list that requires the granting of a variance.
Well, I understand that, but can you point to anything unusual or unique about Stingray's location compared to a place like Grottos or any of the others that were granted that it would be a basis to differentiate?
I believe I can, Your Honor, and I'm referring now to the minutes of the hearing before the Board of Adjustment when Stingray Rock's variance application was considered. And what the board found, or at least noted during the hearing, was that there were concerns of neighbors, that where this is located is right adjacent to a number of houses who had expressed some concern over the addition of an outdoor dining patio.
Okay, and none of the other applicants had anybody who was concerned about no neighbors who voiced complaints?
In all candor, Your Honor, I'm not sure I can speak intelligently to each of those applications and what the board's rationale was and what the evidence was before the board.
Well, you should be able to. The argument has been in the briefs that there has been essentially arbitrary and capricious treatment of Stingray. And, you know, if your position is that it isn't arbitrary or capricious, that every other applicant similarly situated has been treated in some way consistently with Stingray, then you should be able either to give us a principled reason why that's so, or to be able to tell us what the key differentiating facts are.
Well,
but you can't hide behind a big black curtain and say these are all fact specific and I'm not prepared to tell you.
Well, I know that those factors were all considered. The factors do not change from application to application. So the board applied the same standards to the prior
applicants.
Yes, but
somehow, some way, came out differently in this one case.
So I'm confident in saying that what the board found on the prior applications was that the neighbors, the factors that it considers, and that the impact on the neighborhood, the hardship issues, weighed in favor of denying the application. What I can't answer is on each application, I believe the question was which neighbors or how many neighbors complained. I don't know that. I apologize, Your Honor. I would also point out, though, that what we were talking about, as I understood the argument that Stingray Rock is making, is not necessarily that the denial was arbitrary and capricious because it didn't receive the equal protection of as the other applicants. What they were saying was that we simply applied the wrong standard, that we applied the standard for a use.
Now, they make that argument separately, I believe.
That was the claim on their that their constitutional rights were violated, that they have dismissed without prejudice. So the argument, and I would also, and I believe we addressed this in our papers, the other aspect of the variance issue is that, and we put before Your Honor, that the remedy, if the determination is that Stingray was treated differently from these other applicants, or the standard was applied differently, the remedy would be a reapplication to apply what the court believes is the appropriate standards, as opposed to an upholding of the Superior Court's decision. I would be remiss if I didn't spend at least some of my remaining time addressing the other issue concerning statutory interpretation. The first issue I mentioned was the municipality's own interpretation of its code. The second one is the legislative history of the provision at issue. We are at loggerheads, Mr. Pardee and I, on the extent to which Title IV of the Delaware Code is relevant in engaging in this type of statutory construction. We believe that because the Rehoboth Beach Municipal Code provision at issue is based upon and taken directly from the Title IV of the Delaware Code.
Now, what's the record evidence of that?
Well, the provision at issue is 215-7B, which states, an existing restaurant where alcoholic liquor is sold or consumed established prior to June 14, 1991. So that date is important. June 14, 1991 is a bellwether date for this statute. The Delaware Code provision at issue, which is Title IV of the Delaware Code, Section 543, was enacted on that very date, June 14, 1991. So putting aside incredible coincidences, I think the inference is pretty inescapable that the code was adopted on June 14, 1991, and then the code provisions make reference to that particular date in establishing the benchmark dates. So to suggest that these are completely unrelated, I think, is belied by that particular fact.
Why wouldn't that date just be relevant for grandfathering purposes as opposed to interpretation of specific languages within the code on use and permit requirements?
Well, I think it's relevant because it makes clear that the statutes are related. I mean, what we're talking about under the municipal code provision we're talking about is an alcoholic beverage, even in the preamble to the statute, says where alcoholic liquor is sold. So that's why we're talking about this provision. So it is kind of inextricably intertwined with that Delaware code provision. And that Delaware code provision not only refers to patios and addresses how patios are to be handled, but actually refers to the term patio, not alone, not on its own, but calls it a, quote, extension of premises patio permit. That's the name of what it's called. So the idea that, although the Delaware Code refers to it as an extension of premises patio permit, but somehow it's not an extension of the premises, is really belied by the language. And I would also be remiss if I...
Assuming hypothetically that the chapter, or Title IV, has been amended since 1991, is it the city's position that every time there's been an amendment by the General Assembly, there's a contemporaneous amendment of the zoning code in Rehoboth?
No, Your Honor. We are not going that far. All we're suggesting is that if we are engaging in the process of statutory construction, and we're looking for, if we've determined that this code provision is ambiguous, and we need some support for engaging in that analysis, we not only have the way that the city has interpreted this, but we also have some legislative history there. That's all we're doing, is suggesting that if we're going to engage in this process, here's a helpful resource. And
It's not ambiguous, but if you find that it is ambiguous, then the reference point is the alcoholic beverage statute.
Yes, Your Honor. Both the manner in which the city's interpreted and the legislative history, which includes that. I would also be remiss if I didn't emphasize that if the Superior Court's decision is allowed to stand, Stingray Rock itself is in a hopeless quandary. It is in limbo, because the next step for Stingray Rock to build this patio is to obtain from the state of Delaware a license to do that. And in order to do that, the state of Delaware requires, in Title IV, a permit of compliance. So, from the city, from Rehoboth Beach. So it's the same type of permit of compliance that we're saying they need, they say they don't need. The state says, we're not giving you a license without it.
Well, let me understand what you're saying there, because if the decision of the Superior Court's upheld, is the city of Rehoboth going to defy the ruling?
No. But what the city is going to be asked to do by the state is to provide some type of certification that this non-conforming structure is actually in conformance with the city code. Even by Stingray's admission, they're not in compliance.
Right? So you'll force Stingray to go through a second litigation when Rehoboth Beach declines to certify to the
right.
state.
I would imagine that would be the ultimate result. Which, again, if we're talking about basic principles of statutory construction, they are designed to avoid absurd results and conclude on rational results, which are to follow the process that these other restaurants have followed.
You've used up almost all of your reserve time.
I understand that, Your Honor. I believe I have a minute and a half, so I will reserve that if that's okay with the court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning. May it please the court, for the appellee, John Pardee, and I'd like to start by introducing my associate who's with us today, Nicole Ferries. May it please the court, in the appellee's view, the issues presented by this appeal are relatively straightforward. There are a few points I'd like to highlight from the briefing that I think will answer a lot of the questions that the panel has posed already this morning.
But before you do that, can we start on the last point that opposing counsel made? Assuming you prevail, then you're good to go, except that you won't be able to get a license from the state.
Your Honor, this is a little bit entirely outside the record. There are some things that are happening that the court should be aware of, and that is that the applicant has already filed with the ABC its application for a patio, and my understanding is that the ABC has accepted Judge Bradley's decision as the law of the case, such that they are not going to require the applicant to obtain a certificate of compliance from the city. So the application is, in fact, moving forward. It's been filed, and they're in the process of scheduling a hearing. So the ABC has effectively accepted Judge Bradley's decision.
So you're not in limbo?
We are not in a stalemate. Respectfully, the city asked for a stay, and Judge Bradley denied that, and so we proceeded forward, and that's what we're doing now. If this court were to reverse Judge Bradley, then obviously the applicant would have to reverse course. Let me start by trying to answer Justice Ridgely's first question about the hypothetical posed by Judge Bradley. Does the premises of the restaurant mean just the building, some part of the building, or the entire land and building? And respectfully, I think Judge Bradley got it right. The only way to answer that question in a manner which allows all of the applicable code provisions to be read in harmony is to conclude that the premises of the restaurant means only those internal portions of the restaurant's building structure that are devoted to restaurant purposes. And that means the seated dining area, the food storage and preparation area, the passageways and entrance foyers, the restrooms, the dance floor, and the bar area as referenced in Section 270.28 of the code. It does not include those areas inside the building which are not devoted to restaurant purposes, for example, an office. Nor does it include those areas outside the building, for example, a patio. So we believe that Judge Bradley got that analysis correct, that the definition of a permanent seated dining area in Section 215 of the code supports that conclusion by excluding patio from a permanent seated dining area or the bar area. And so for the purposes of the...
But even Judge Bradley seemed to concede that intuitively adding tables and chairs into a patio is an extension of the restaurant. If you had Jay Leno interviewing people on the street asking if that's an extension of the restaurant, wouldn't most people say yes?
He did. He acknowledged that one could reach that conclusion, but I think ultimately he concluded that if you look at the specific terms of the city code, that it, although it doesn't define extension and it doesn't define premises, the only logical way to read it is that the patio is something outside of the premises, just as if other areas inside the building which are not devoted to restaurant purposes are not part of the premises. So unfortunately, as awkward as it may be, the city code has a very specific, unique definition of premises that doesn't seem to jive perhaps with common sense, but that's what the code says. So that's what Judge Bradley concluded.
Go ahead.
Is it possible to reconcile the language, the relevant language of the Rehoboth Beach Code with the language of the ABC that appears to call for an opposite result?
My first answer to that question is, Your Honor, that it's not necessary, but the second answer is no, I don't believe that it is. It's odd. Rule 42.1 actually defines premises as excluding a patio, which would seem to be consistent with the city code. But then, of course, it makes references to an extension of patio premises license, as my colleague mentioned. So the ABC rule...
I mean, one thought that occurred to me, but it, you know, it may be totally off base, is that the statute was contemplating the possibility of liquor being served in the patio.
I'm sorry?
That the statute, the ABC, was contemplating the possibility of liquor being served on the patio as well as at the bar.
That would seem to make sense.
Can I get into a slightly different subject, which is in order to accept your view of the statute, we would have to ignore the fact that it has been interpreted in the opposite fashion for apparently years and years and years. And that's generally a pretty significant factor in deciding what legislation means.
I understand the argument, Your Honor. Respectfully, I would disagree with my colleague's proposition. At page 7 of the appellant's reply brief, the board argues that Stingray is merely being required to follow the same procedure as other nonconforming restaurants which have previously obtained variances and certificates of compliance. But the record, frankly, belies that contention. If you look at what happened with Cultured Pearl, Grotto's Pizza, Green Turtle, and Nicola's, all of those restaurants were required to obtain certificates of compliance because they were not existing restaurants whose liquor licenses were issued by the ABC prior to June 14 of 1991. All four...
They weren't grandfathered, in other words.
Pardon?
They weren't grandfathered.
Correct. All four of those restaurants were new operations at new locations which had never before had a liquor license issued at that location. By contrast, Stingray is an existing restaurant with a liquor license issued prior to June 14 of 1991 and is proposing to operate a patio at the same location as the existing restaurant. And thus, Stingray satisfies the exception criteria under Section 2157B, where the other four did not. So Stingray's argument has always been and continues to be that we're not required to go through this process because we're grandfathered. The others went through the process because they weren't existing restaurants with liquor licenses existing in those locations. And so then the second argument becomes, okay, if we have to go through that process, then we should be treated the same as them. You gave them variances and certificates of compliance, but you didn't give one to us.
Well, okay, let me just get this factual matter cleared up. Is there any record evidence of other restaurants that serve liquor that were in your position, namely that they had been grandfathered and now they wanted to put in a patio and they were allowed to do it without a certificate, or by contrast they were required to? You can't be the only restaurant that's had this problem.
That's correct, Your Honor. There are five restaurants, and all five of them have been mentioned, the Stingray and the other four that have been mentioned. There is an affidavit in the record from Ms. Ferries. She did a comprehensive search. The city was good enough to allow us to review all of their records, and we found the only five restaurants in town that have confronted this issue. Stingray is unique because it's okay. The only one that fits, as I mentioned.
There's an argument that's made in passing in the other side's brief to the effect that the focus here may be too much on the trees and not on the forest. And by that I mean that your side's position overlooks the underlying policy purpose of allowing non-conforming uses, and that is, to the extent they're grandfathered, that's fine, but the code is not intended to allow an expansion of the grandfathered non-conforming use, and that's in effect what your client is trying to do here.
Interestingly, Your Honor, there is an argument that we made in the briefs which addresses that point, and to my knowledge, the appellant never addressed it, and that focuses on Section 270.50B of the code. This argument is found at pages 18 through 19 of our answering brief, and that particular section of the code provides any legal non-conforming structure devoted to a conforming use may be extended, provided that such extension conforms to the applicable dimensional requirements of the zoning district in which the legal non-conforming structure is located. And so we argue in our brief that
that policy is, to the extent there is such a policy, it's been overridden by the city's own code.
Yes, Your Honor. If I may, there are just a couple of other points I'd like to touch on. And I apologize for the somewhat scrambled nature of our presentation, but that's the nature of the beast, I suppose.
Well, we're asking questions in a scrambled way.
Quite all right. I won't venture too far off the trail. I did want to talk a little bit about the interplay between the ABC rules and Title IV vis-a-vis the city code. And we make the point in our brief that this issue really wasn't raised and briefed below. Judge Bradley mentioned it in footnote 8 of his original opinion. I think it's fair to say is more of a historical reference point, and then the issue sort of gained steam during re-argument. But be that as it may, I think Justice Ridgely asked the question, where in the record is there anything that suggests that the city somehow incorporated the definitions or the rules adopted by the DABCC? And there isn't anything in the record that says that. And frankly, it would be very easy for the city, if they wanted to follow the ABC and have the same definition of premises in the city of Rehoboth as the ABC follows, to simply amend the code by, for example, adding language in Section 270.28, which talks about the areas of the restaurant that are or areas that are devoted to restaurant purposes. They could include patio in that language. They could change the definition of Section 2151 for permanent seated dining area to include patios as part of the permanent seated dining area, which would then comport with sort of the common sense view when a patron walks by, and is the patio part of the premises? Well, if they said that in the definition, then sure, that would be the law in the city, but it's not. Lastly, they could define extension in the code as including a patio. Interestingly, as I mentioned earlier, the ABC rule definition of premises excludes patios. Then it goes on to talk about licenses. I think the way the ABC looks at it is there are two different licenses. You have the restaurant has its own license, and the patio has a separate license. But in the ABC's view, the patio isn't really an extension of the restaurant premises. It's a separate license. And that's the most sense that I can make out of it, and I hope that's been somewhat helpful.
Can I focus on a separate issue for a moment here? Nobody's really talked about the question of whether the board correctly analyzed this as a use variance or an area variance. And in addition to addressing that, I would like, if you can, for you to tell me how it was considered in these other cases. There are four other restaurants. They were given variances. Were they analyzed as use variances or area variances?
Excellent question. Let me start with the last part of that. I don't know, because the record's not very clear, how the Board of Adjustment viewed the variance applications by the other four applicants, whether they considered them to be use variances or area variances. But the reality is that they granted them. And the record seems to bear out that they granted them without much resistance at all. With regard to Stingray's variance request, the board's attempt in its reply brief to refashion the rationale that was offered by the board for denial of Stingray's variance request is frankly not availing. The board never gave any guidance or consideration to the criteria comprising the exceptional practical difficulty standard, including but not limited to the minimal nature of the dimensional change sought by Stingray. If you look at the other four cases, they were all much larger restaurants with much larger exceedances of the 5,000 square foot limitation. Some of them as much as, I believe, over 10,000 square feet. And yet the city granted the variance in those cases. But in our case, the board never discussed the nature of the C3 zoning district in which Stingray lies, the character of the immediate vicinity and the uses contained therein, or the fact that there are restaurants directly across the street and directly up the street. Culture Pearl is just a stone's throw next door.
What does a stone's throw mean? How many blocks?
About, I would say, 200 yards, perhaps. Culture Pearl sits at the corner of Rehoboth Avenue and Lake Drive, and Stingray is about three-quarters of the way down that block on Lake Drive. So very close.
Well, then let me ask you this. Why did the board deny you? I mean, if you're making the argument, and if it's got support, that we're just like the others, if anything, we're asking for less of a variance than they did, we're in the same area, the same zoning district, the same everything, the board has something against you, or what?
Hold that thought, Your Honor. That is the great mystery of this case, because the board has never explained why it is okay for so many other restaurants in the city with much greater square footage exceedances to have outdoor dining patios while granting the same relief to Stingray is somehow inappropriate. I don't know the answer. I wish I did. Hopefully we'll find out someday.
Let me ask you a question that's a little less emotionally charged. Mr. Griffith opened his presentation by making a two-pronged argument. Number one, that provisions of the code that are at issue here are unambiguous and clear and require a ruling in favor of the city. But in the alternative, if there is ambiguity, then it should be resolved by reference to the ABC. You've responded to the second half of that argument, but I'm not sure I understand or I've heard a response to the first.
There may be one point and one point only upon which my good friend Mr. Griffith and I agree upon, and that is we view the code as unambiguous as well. We think that if you apply the definitions given for the defined terms and the common meaning of the undefined terms, then the answer is elementary, as Judge Bradley found. So we don't believe it's ambiguous either. I would add one other point to the second prong of that question, and that is the general concept that zoning ordinances, if they are ambiguous, are generally resolved in favor of the free use of the land for the property owner. So that's not really an argument that was touched upon in the briefs, but that's a concept that I think has been upheld by this court on many occasions.
The default tiebreaker.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor.
I know my time is very limited, so I'll be as brief as I possibly can. At the very conclusion of Stingray Rock's presentation, the direct question was asked whether the language is ambiguous or not, and counsel conceded that their position is that the language is unambiguous. However, at no point during the presentation or in the papers has Stingray Rock addressed the determinative, in our view, provision, which is 270-19, providing no one shall construct or operate a patio unless it is included in a special permit of compliance issued pursuant to Chapter 215. There's never been an explanation as to why Stingray Rock believes that it is accepted from the term no one. That provision squarely addresses why Stingray Rock needs a permit of compliance, because everyone needs one. That's all I have here.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. We'll take this under consideration and have a short recess.